Okay, well, again, everybody knows what I'm fixing to say, so I'll just do it. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's the book of Numbers, Bamidbar, in the wilderness, chapter 8. And actually starts kind of, sort of, in the second verse. You could say it starts in the first verse, but we see this one fairly frequently. It says, "And Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said," here we go, "speak unto Aharon, and say unto him the following." Okay, well, so far, that isn't the unique word that's going to name the parsha. "When you light the lamps," the seven lamps that shall give light in the front of the menorah he's talking about. And that word in the Hebrew is Baha Alotcha, or sometimes you'll see it, and I think at least the way I read the vowel pointers, it's Baha Alotcha, but they say Baha Aloteka too. In any case, has to do with lighting of the lamps. And it's also said to be in the first month, while the people of Israel, the sons of Israel, Kol Israel, were traveling the Midbar in the wilderness. So with that, let's see what it says. Aaron did so. He lighted the lamps thereof so as to give light in front of the menorah. And some Bibles translate this as candlestick, which really seems kind of silly. This is one of those words that really, it's a specific thing. Let's just leave it in the Hebrew, the menorah, the seven-branch menorah, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. And as you know, when we see those words, I like to emphasize, "as Yahuwah commanded Moshe," because it appears a lot, and he did as commanded. And obviously, because it keeps telling us that, that's important. "And this," it says, "was the work of the menorah. It was a beaten work of gold under the base thereof, all the flowers, one beaten work." Literally, it was made out of a single piece of gold to start with. "This was done according to the pattern which Yahuwah showed Moshe, and so," it says, "he made the menorah." Then it says, "Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, take the Levites from among the B'nai Israel and cleanse them." Now, this is kind of interesting, too. Remember, there's a lot of Levites at this point. This includes more than just the tribe of, the family of Moses, the Kohanim, and even more than just the Kohathites. It includes several other clans as well. Cleanse them. So here's what you're going to do to them, to cleanse them. "Sprinkle the water of purification upon them. Let them cause a razor to pass over all of their flesh, then let them wash their clothes and cleanse themselves." So they basically are going to be shaven clean. "Then let them take a young bull, along with its meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil. Another young bull you'll take for a chatat, a sin offering, and you'll present the Levites before the tent of meeting, the Mishkan. Assemble the whole congregation, kol edat, right there, of the B'nai Israel." So everybody's going to be there. Remember, this is a whole lot of folks. This is arguably multiple millions at this point. 603,550 men of war, at least of the age, to be able to go to war, and all the wives and children that go with them. "So you present the Levites before Yahuwah, and the B'nai Israel shall lay their hands on the Levites." Now, there's 22,000 of the Levites. Remember, they replaced the firstborn. So this is a whole lot of people in this ceremony. "And Aaron," it says, "shall offer the Levites before Yahuwah as a wave offering." I guess if you've ever seen, you know, like a wave at a major stadium, this is probably a lot bigger than that. Think about it. "A wave offering from the B'nai Israel so that they may be able to do the service of Yahuwah. Levites then shall lay their hand upon the heads of the bulls and offer the one for a chatat, a sin offering, the other for an olah, a burnt offering unto Yahuwah, to make atonement for all of them," all of the Levites. "Then you'll set the Levites before Aaron and before his sons, and offer them for a wave offering before or unto Yahuwah. And thus," it says, "you shall separate the Levites from among the B'nai Israel, and the Levites," literally, "are mine. After that, the Levites shall go in to do the service of the Mishkan," all the things that by their family is going to do. "Then you'll cleanse them and offer them for a wave offering, because," he says, "they are wholly given unto me from among the B'nai Israel." Instead of, and this word is tachat, in place of, those who were the firstborn, the ones that opened the womb, the firstborn of all of the B'nai Israel, "I've taken them unto me. For all of the firstborn are among the children of Israel are mine, both man and beast. On the day that I smote the firstborn in the land of Egypt, Mitzrayim, I sanctified them, I set them apart for myself. And I have taken the Levites, tachat, Now remember, this is the same word, I like to emphasize this one too, an eye in place of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, you've heard, but tekat means literally in place of. And this is the Levites in place of the firstborn among the B'nai Israel. And I've given the Levites, they're given to Aaron and his sons from among the B'nai Israel, to do the service of Israel in the Mishkan, the tent of meeting, make atonement for the children of Israel, so that there will be no plague among the B'nai Israel through the children of Israel coming nigh unto the sanctuary. So there's a continual warning on that front. Thus did Moshe, and did Aaron, and all of the congregation of the B'nai Israel unto the Levites, according to all that Yahuwah commanded Moshe, touching the Levites. So the children of Israel did unto them. And the Levites purified themselves, they washed their clothes, Aaron offered them for a sacred gift before Yahuwah. Aaron made atonement for them to cleanse them, and after that the Levites went in to do the service, avodah, in the Mishkan before Aaron and before his sons. Again, here's this words, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe concerning the Levites, so did they unto them. All right, then it says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, this is that which pertains unto the Levites. From 25 years old and up until the age of 50, they shall go in to perform the service in the work of the Mishkan, tent of meeting. And after 50, they will return from service. In other words, they retire, is what we'd say nowadays. They serve no more. But they minister with their brethren in the tent of meeting to keep the charge. But they do no manner of service. So they're basically, what would be the word? Levites emeritus at this point. And this you shall do unto the Levites, touching their charges. All right, chapter 9 is going to talk about what is said to be the only Pesach that was celebrated in the wilderness for 40 years. Now, I don't know that that's completely verifiable, but it's certainly something that you'll hear fairly frequently. Yahuwah then spoke to Moshe, Bamidbar Sinai, in the wilderness of Sinai, the first month of the second year. Okay, so this is the second year, first month, after they had come out of Mitzrayim. And he said, let the children of Israel keep the Pesach, Ha Pesach, in its appointed season. In the 14th day of this month, at dusk, you keep it in its appointed season, according to all the statutes, the Huchat of it, and according to all the ordinances thereof, you shall keep it. So Moshe spoke to the B'nai Israel that they should, in fact, keep the Pesach, and they did. They kept the Passover in the first month, 14th day of the month, at dusk, Bamidbar Sinai, according to all that Yahuwah commanded Moshe, so did the B'nai Israel. Now, there were certain men, though, that because they were unclean, because they had come in contact with a dead body, so they couldn't, because they were, again, unclean, they couldn't keep the Passover on that day. So they came before Moshe and Aaron, and they said, hey, we're unclean. We've been in contact with a dead body of a man. So are we to be kept back, not able to bring the offering of Yahuwah in its appointed season among the B'nai Israel? This is a serious thing. They're concerned. So Moshe said, hey, hang on, stay tuned. Y'all stay here that I may hear what Yahuwah will command concerning you. And obviously he did, because the next paragraph says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, speak in turn to the children of Israel, and say to them, if any man of you of your generations shall be unclean, for example, by reason of a dead body, or he's on a journey afar off, yet he shall keep the Passover unto Yahuwah. So here's the mechanism. Second month, not the first month, but the second month, a month later, on the 14th day at dusk, they shall keep it. They eat it with unleavened bread and with bitter herbs. Let none of it remain unto morning. Notice this is going to sound a lot like the exact set of commandments for the first one. Nor do they break a bone of it. According to all these statutes of the Passover, they shall keep it. But a man that's clean and it's not on a journey, well, basically he's without excuse. If he doesn't keep the Passover, that soul shall be cut off from his people, because he has not brought the offering of Yahuwah in its appointed season. That man shall bear his own sin. Now, if a stranger is among you sojourning, and he'd like to do it, keep the Pesach unto Yahuwah, according to the statute of the Passover, the chuk, and according to the ordinance, he shall do so. You shall have a statute echad, or echat in this case, one, unified, for both the stranger and for the homeborn. And on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the Mishkan, the tabernacle, the tent of the testimony, and at evening there was upon the Mishkan, as it were, the appearance of fire until morning. So it was always. The cloud covered it and the appearance of fire by night. And whenever the cloud was taken up from over the tent, well, it's time to go. Then the children of Israel journeyed, and the place where the cloud abode, where it stopped, that's where they camped. At the commandment of Yahuwah, the children of Israel journeyed, and at the commandment of Yahuwah, they encamped. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they stayed put. And when the cloud tarried, sometimes it was many days, well, then the Bnei Israel kept the charge of Yahuwah, and they didn't go anywhere. They journeyed not. Sometimes the cloud was just on the Mishkan for a few days. According to the commandment of Yahuwah, they remained encamped. And according to the commandment of Yahuwah, they journeyed. He's making a really clear point. When the cloud goes, you go. When it doesn't, you stay. Sometimes the cloud was from evening till morning, and when it was taken up in the morning, they journeyed. Or if it continued by day and by night, when the cloud was taken up, they went. Whether it's 2 days or a month or a year, the cloud tarried upon the Mishkan, abiding thereon, and the Bnei Israel remained encamped. Sometimes they went for a long time. They journeyed not, but when it was taken up, it was time to go. At the commandment of Yahuwah, they encamped, and at the commandment of Yahuwah, they journeyed. This is the real key. They were in the wilderness, Bamidbar, and it was all about him. When it was time to go, he told them. When it was time to stop, he told them, and they did so. At the commandment of Yahuwah, by the hand of Moshe. Chapter 10 says, well, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, get yourself, make two trumpets, and zotzrot. These are silver trumpets. They're made out of kesef. And by the way, notice it's translated as silver. They're not money. Not two trumpets made out of money. This is the same thing, though. They're made out of silver. They are of beaten work. You make them. And they shall be for you. In other words, you use them to call out the congregation and for causing the camps to set forward. Now, there's going to be a description of how this works. But basically, they know that when the cloud moves, it's time to go. Still, though, we need some organization. It's not just everybody get up and go at the same time when we have chaos. They are going to move in an order, and that order is going to be laid out right here. When they blow with them, notice it's plural there, kol ha'edah, all of the congregation shall gather themselves unto you at the door of the tent of meeting. Now, there's a lot of people here, obviously. That's a big crowd. They can't all gather at the door, but they're around. If they blow but with one of these trumpets, then the leaders, the princes, the heads of the thousands will gather themselves unto you. So if it's just one trumpet, it's only the leaders. But when they blow an alarm, a teruah, that's the nine short blasts, the camps that lie first on the east side will take their journey. Remember, that's starting with Judah. Well, at least among those camps that are not at the Mishkan. When you blow an alarm the second time, the camps on the south shall go forward. And you blow their alarm for their journeys. When the assembly is to be gathered together, you blow, but you do not sound the teruah. And the sons of Aaron, the Kohanim, will blow with the trumpets. This shall be unto you a statute, a chukat olam, statute forever, throughout your generations. When you go to war in your land against an adversary that oppresses you, then you shall sound the teruah, an alarm with the trumpet, plural trumpets. And you shall be remembered before Yehuyarel and be saved from your enemies. This sounds like a very positive thing. The enemies are coming, and you sound the alarm with the teruah with the trumpets, and you shall be saved from your enemies. Also, in the day of your gladness, in your appointed seasons, your new moons, you blow with those trumpets. Over your burnt offerings, over your sacrifices of your shalomim, your peace offerings, this shall be to you a memorial before Elohim, your El, Ani Yahuwah Elohechem. Now, it came to pass, then it said, in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th day of the month. Remember, the 14th day of the month begins the time of Pesach with the meal, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. We got a week then following that of unleavened bread and the time where there is no leaven to be found. And it came to pass then at the end of that time, the cloud was taken up from over the tabernacle, the Mishkan, of the testimony. And the children of Israel, as you already have understood, they set forth by stages out of Bamidbar Sinai. And the cloud abode Bamidbar Paran, the wilderness of Paran. There they took their first journey, according to the commandment of Yahuwah, by the hand of Moshe. And in the first place, the standard of the camp, the children of Judah set forward, according to their hosts. Over his host was Nachshon, son of Aminadab. Now, what we're going to get here is a listing of all of them taking their first journey as they set out. Second host, Issachar, the leader of which was Nathanael, son of Zuar. The number three was Zebulun, and the leader there was Eliab, son of Helon. Then the Mishkan was taken down. The sons of Gershon and the sons of Merari, who bore the Mishkan, set forward. So we have the tribes to the east. Then the Mishkan's taken down, and the load bearers, Gershon and Merari, they set out. Then the standard of the camp of Reuben set forward according to their hosts. And the leader there was Elitzur, son of Shedeur. And over the host of the tribe of Simeon, we have Shelumiel, son of Zuri Shaddai. And finally, Gad, whose leader was Eliasaph, son of Deuel. Then the Kohathites, the bearers of the sanctuary itself. So remember, these are not the Kohanim, but they are the same tribe as the sons of Aaron. And they are carrying all of the golden articles, the appurtenances of the Mishkan itself, so that the tabernacle might be set up against their coming. Then, we're going to go to the west side, standard of the camp of Ephraim, the Benai Ephraim, children of Ephraim, they set forward. And among them, the leader was Elishama, son of Amihud. Next, Manasseh, whose leader, Gamaliel, the son of Pedatzur. And finally, Benjamin, the leader of that tribe, Abidan, son of Gideoni. Then we get to the north side, where Dan set forward, according to their hosts, and their leader, Ahiezer, son of Amishaddai. Then next, Asher, who was led by Pagiel, son of Ochran. And finally, Naphtali, led by Ahira, son of Enan. Thus, it says, were the journeys of the Bnei Israel according to their hosts, and they set forward. So you can imagine, you know, quite a scene with basically close to 3 million people, men, women, children, tents, animals, and an entire huge camp, literally a city, moving out. Moshe said to Hobab, son of Reuel, the Midianite. Now, Hobab, son of Reuel, the Midianite. This is another one of the names that we seem to have for Moshe's father-in-law. And, Jethro sometimes, here he is Reuel, the Midianite. Anyway, his son Hobab. And Moshe said, we're journeying unto the place which Yahuwah said, I'll give it to you. Come with us, we'll do you good. And Yahuwah has spoken good concerning Israel. And this time Hobab says, well, I will not go, but I will depart to my own land and to my own kin. Well, the response was, don't leave us, I pray, for as much as you know how we are to encamp in the wilderness, you shall be to us instead of eyes. We can really use your help here. It'll be with, if you go with us, yea, it shall be, that whatsoever good Yahuwah shall do to us, the same we will do unto you. So they set forward from the mount of Yahuwah 3 days' journey. The ark of the covenant of Yahuwah went before them 3 days' journey to seek out a resting place for them. Now, these are the last three verses of chapter 10. And here I'm going to make one more note, because at this point, we're going to see, it says, and the cloud of Yahuwah was, wait a minute, okay, here comes one of these jots and tittles, the scribal notations, one of the probably most unique in the whole Torah. And again, note, these do not show up in the English. I've never, hardly ever at least, I can't remember even seeing a footnote in the English. But this is what's called the inverted noons. This is a noon that is backwards from normal. It looks like a bracket. And it looks like basically the open bracket. And in this case, it's not an open bracket and a closed bracket. It's two open brackets. But the sages seem to think this is to set these last couple of verses apart. And I've heard all kinds of comments about this. The one I like is, the inverted noon set off what's been called the book never written. Like, there's a whole bunch of stories here that are encapsulated within this little set off set of brackets. And it goes like this. It came to pass, whenever the ark set forward, that Moshe said, now we've heard these words, and now you know why they're set off, maybe. Rise up, rise, O Yahuwah, and let your enemies be scattered. Let them that hate you flee from before you. And I find that particularly inspiring today. And I think about it in the context of a nation of people who don't, in many cases, even know their identity. But they do begin to understand that they are to serve Yahuwah and that they are called out, and we are sons of Abraham and we are descendants of the B'nai Israel spiritually and probably physically, but at least in the most important sense. And these words ought to really resonate with us. Whenever the ark set forward, Moshe said, "Arise, O Yahuwah, and let your enemies be scattered. Let them that hate you flee from before you." And when it rested, he said the following, "Return, O Yahuwah, unto the tens of thousands of the families of Israel." And at that point, we get the final line in the book, or the chapter in the book, and the final inverted noon that marks and sets off those two admonitions. All right, chapter 11 says, "Among the people, there were all kinds of folks. They were as murmurers, complainers, and you know the term I like to use, modern parlance, whiners. Speaking evil," it says, this is serious, "in the eyes of the ears of Yahuwah. When he heard it, his anger was kindled. And the fire of Yahuwah burned amongst them." This is really serious stuff, folks. "And he devoured," that fire devoured the uttermost part of the camp. So the people cried out to Moshe. And Moshe prayed aloud unto Yahuwah, and the fire abated. And the name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of Yahuwah burned among them. And as you can guess, a lot of times this is not a good sign. "The mixed multitude among them fell a-lusting." They started getting an itch for something that they really wanted to have, and it was going to cause some real problems. "The children of Israel also wept for their own part." So we have the mixed multitude. And notice, oftentimes the entire group is referred to as the mixed multitude, but here, "the mixed multitude among them fell a-lusting." And it says, "the B'nai Israel also, they wept for their own part." So we got kind of a division, and yet people from both sets are engaging in what's going to get a whole lot of people killed. Oh, would that we were given some flesh to eat. We really want some flesh to eat. And here's one of my favorite whines in the book. Well, or my least favorite, I guess. "We remember all the good fish, things we were able to eat in Egypt, Mitzrayim, for nothing. It's free fish. And the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. And now our soul is just plain dried up, because nothing at all here, nothing save this manna, to look forward to." Now, the Bible at this point pauses and said, this manna was like coriander seed. The appearance was like bdellium. So what it seems to be parenthetically telling us is, hey, this was pretty good stuff. They should have been thankful for it. That's at least an indicator of the problem here. "People went about, they gathered it, they ground it in mills, they beat it in mortars, they seethed it in pots, and they made cakes out of it. The taste of it was like the taste of a cake baked with oil." Sounds like a pretty good stuff. And I can imagine that probably after eating it for a long time, they've been over a year at this point out there, maybe they're getting tired, they'd like something else. They got it. They got cakes, mortars, pots, seethed, baked, you name it, baked manna, stewed manna. "But when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell upon it." Moshe heard all this stuff. He heard the people weeping. Now listen to this. "Family by family, every man at the door of his tent." This was not just a little whining. This was literally a mass of whining. "And the anger of Yahuwah was kindled greatly." So we know how serious it is. Moshe, as you might expect, was displeased. And he said to Yahuwah, "Why are you treating me this way? Why have you dealt ill with your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight that you put all of the burden of this people, these whiners, upon me? Have I conceived all this people? Am I the one that brought them forth, that you should say unto me, carry them in your bosom as a nursing father carries a suckling child unto the land which you swore unto their fathers?" Now, let's pause here, because what's interesting about this is there's a whole lot of whining going on. And I can't help but think whining is a bit contagious. And it looks like almost there's a little bit of wine creeping into Moshe even at this point. And also the sages tried kind of, I think, to excuse him. We'll point out, wait a minute, Moshe also has another concern here. We're going to see how this plays out in a second. Where should I have flesh to give unto all this people? They trouble me. They're really getting on my nerves with all this weeping, this gnashing of teeth, this whining, saying, give us flesh so we can eat. I'm just plain not able to bear all of this people alone by myself. It's just too much for me. It's too heavy for me. So, he says, here comes a little bit of whine on Moshe's part. If you deal thus with me, just kill me outright, I pray, out of hand. If I have found favor in your sight, let me not look upon my wretchedness. So Yahuwah now says unto Moshe, get yourself 70 men from the elders of Israel. Now this is an interesting response, and we're going to see several things come out of this story. So get 70 men, elders of Israel. Now remember, how many tribes there are? There's 12 tribes. 70 men. If we took 6 from each tribe, that would be 72. So he wants 70, so we're going to have some extras here if you take 6 per tribe. Men that you know to be elders of the people, officers over them, bring them unto the Mishkan so that they can stand there with you. And I'm going to come down, and I'm going to speak with you there, and I will take of the Spirit which is upon you, and I'm going to spread it out. I'll put it upon them, and they will bear the burden of the people with you so that you don't have to bear it all by yourself. And you say to the people the following, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow. Oh, you ready for flesh? You will eat flesh, because you have wept in the ears of Yahuwah, saying, we sure wish we had flesh to eat. It was so good for us there in Egypt in that wonderful slavery. Therefore, you want it? You got it. Yahuwah will give you flesh, and you will eat. Now, so far, the sarcasm is thin, and as you've noticed, I've emphasized it a bit, because we're getting ready to see where it really comes out. And here where the sarcasm just kind of hits the fan. Verse 19 says, you're not going to just eat one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days. You want meat? Oh, you're going to get it. A whole month you're going to get meat, so much till it comes out of your nostrils, until it's loathsome to you, because you've rejected Yahuwah, who is among you, and you have troubled him with your weeping, saying, why do we even bother to come out of Egypt? So, Moshe said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 men on foot. You can see Moshe's thinking practicalities. You're going to give them meat? How much meat's that going to be? We got 3 million people here, 600,000 men on foot, and lots of others. And yet you said, I'm going to give them flesh, not just for a day, but for a whole month? Now, you can imagine, we're going to see a little bit of a comeuppance for Moshe, too, I think. Again, the sages probably disagree. You're not supposed to say too much bad about Moshe, and obviously he is he's letting his hair down a bit here. If the flocks and herds, if all of those were slain for him, would that be enough? Or if all the fish of the sea were gathered together for them, would that be enough? Would that suffice? Now here comes the response. I love this response. Yahuwah says to Moshe, "Is Yahuwah's hand wax short? You don't think I can do it? You just stand there. You watch. You shall now see whether or not my word shall come to pass unto you or not." Oops. Okay, well, I think Moshe probably was a bit taken aback, or at least he got the message. He went out. He told the people the words of Yahuwah. He did as commanded. He gathered 70 men of the elders of the people, and he set them round about the Mishkan, or Ohel, the tent. And Yahuwah came down in the cloud, he spoke unto him, and he took the Spirit was upon Moshe, and he put it upon those 70 elders. And it came to pass that whenever the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied, but they did so no more. So they did it just for a while. But, now notice folks, the scripture doesn't tell us explicitly, but the math is kind of straightforward here, and it fits what we're reading. There remained 2 men in the camp. Now, why are there 2 men in the camp? The first time I read this, years and years ago, I didn't think about the simple math here. How did he pick them? So if it was 6 per tribe, and that obviously seems to be the implication, that would be 72. He's got 70. Well, where are the extra 2? Here we go. There remained 2 men in the camp, the name of one. And notice, we're not told the names of all of those other 6 men from each tribe, but we're going to get the names of these 2 fellows, the 2 that were left out. Eldad, and the name of the other was Medad, and the Spirit rested upon them. They got some Spirit too, and they were of them that were recorded, but they did not go unto the tent, and they prophesied, not in the tent, in the camp. So, a young man comes running, and he tells Moshe, "Hey, Eldad and Medad, they're out there prophesying in the camp." Like he's tapping on them. This is a bad thing. Moshe doesn't seem to think so. Joshua, son of Nun, minister of Moshe from his youth, answered and said, "My lord Moshe, shut him in." And Moshe said unto him, unto Joshua at this point, "Are you jealous for my sake? Come on, man. Would all that Yahuwah's people were prophets. I'd like to have more folks like this, that Yahuwah would put his spirit upon them." So he's not buying it. He's not upset at all. Moshe withdrew into the camp, he and the elders of Israel. So this was a blessing to Moshe, some of his spirit on those 70, and the extra two, they're out prophesying as well, and this is a good thing. Then there went forth a wind from Yahuwah. Wind, we know that word, right? Isn't that usually ruach? And it brought quails from the sea. Now, quail here is, shalim, plural. And he let them fall by the camp. Listen to this. How many quail are we talking about? Quail come from the sea, and they fell around the camp. A day's journey on a side. A day's journey on one side, on the other side, all around the camp. There are quails for a day's journey. How far can a man walk in a day? Well, normally I'd say it might be 10 miles, certainly 6, maybe 15, 18 if he's a strong man. But wait a minute. How far can you walk in quails? I don't know. I'm suspecting the quails might slow you down a bit, but this is still a whole heck of a lot of quail. And ready for this? This is going to slow you down even more. They were 2 cubits deep. 2 cubits. That's 3 feet deep of quails. That's a lot of quails. People rose up that day, all the night, all the next day, and they got themselves quails. Oh, baby, look at all these quails. They gathered, the one that gathered the least got himself 10 heaps of quails. They spread them all abroad for themselves all around the camp. Now, I'm looking at this and I'm going, think about it. This is almost kind of silly. It's almost, if I was there, I'd hope that I would be wise enough to think, okay, well, if I need a quail, I can go out and get one. But on the other hand, because there's lots of them out there. I don't know how far they go, because I don't know if I can see, 3 feet of quails, how far they go, but they go a long ways. Plenty there. So while the flesh was still between their teeth, they're just now fixing to chew down on this. They hadn't even chewed the first bite yet. The anger of Yahuwah was kindled against the people, and he smote them with a very great plague. So here's a problem. The name of that place was called Kibrot Hatava, because there they buried the people. Kibor, by the way, the root here is grave. The grave of desire, or the grave of lust. They buried the people that lusted. There certainly is a message here, and it's pretty dramatic. Okay, from there, from Kibrot Hatava, the people journeyed unto Hazeroth, and then they abode at Hazeroth. And finally, we're going to see the first few verses of this chapter, chapter 12, and another one of these really famous stories. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moshe because of a Cushite woman whom he had married. Now, I've heard people say, oh, this was probably Zipporah. No, I don't think it is. It's a Cushite. And this is a different woman, it sounds like. That's pretty clear. He's married somebody else. A name is not given, but she's a Cushite. Cushite would be an Ethiopian woman, the way we would probably understand it today. And some would say, oh, is this because she's black? I doubt it. But whatever it is, and I think there's more to it, we'll probably talk a little bit about this. Lots of speculation, as you might expect, on this front. And Scripture is a little bit unclear as to what all the reasons why they're doing this. Anyway, they said, has Yahuwah really just spoken only with Moshe? Hadn't he spoken with us too? Yahuwah heard it. So far, this doesn't sound good. And then it has this little aside. Tells us, the man Moshe, he was really a nav. Now, this is an interesting Hebrew word. First time this appears in Scripture, a nav. The next time is in Job. So, only appears once in the whole Torah, this word. It's translated as humble, or meek, or even poor. But I don't know that poor makes sense in this case. Moshe is rich in spirit. None of them were hurting for possessions, nor were they obnoxiously rich. They certainly had what they needed. Anyway, so Moshe was meek, a nav. I have tended to suggest over the years that there are probably multiple ways to translate this. The meaning is literally right here in this verse. And if there's anything that kind of has leaped off the page over the years to me, I like the term teachable. Moshe, it says, he was above all the men of whatever this Anav quality was. He had more than all of the men on the face of the earth. And meek is okay. Blessed are the meek, they'll inherit the earth. But humble is okay. Humble, well, anyway, teachable. To my mind, teachable fits. You don't have to agree with that. But what we're going to see with Moshe, and this is a characteristic that continues to appear, he makes a mistake, he learns from it. He admits it, too. And it's not quite the same as what we see with David, which is, you know, to suck carpet and to repent. This is more like he has a problem, he learns, he picks up on it. And Moshe is arguably one of the most teachable men, because he learned the whole Torah, right, from Yah, right? That's a pretty amazing understanding. So Moshe was a Nav, anyway. And Yahuwah then spoke suddenly unto Moshe, and unto Aaron, and unto Miriam. So the key here is the word suddenly, I think. We don't see that. Surprise! Why? And he said, come on out here, right now, the three of you, unto the tent of meeting. And the three came out. Now let's stop here, because I'll lay out a bit of the speculation. There are some that suggest, what is the problem here? Maybe they're jealous of Moshe. They're prophets too. We're going to see that. Certainly an element that plays out. But it does have something to do with his second wife, this Cushite. And I have wondered, is it possible that they're saying, hey, you know, you're not doing your husbandly duties to this second wife. Maybe she's not getting the physical loving that she needs, something like that. Now, part of the reason why I suggest that is because of this word surprise here. Now, remember that one of the things we see is that sometimes when Moshe says we're gonna commune with Yah and he's gonna talk to us, then you're to refrain from sexual congress for a while. So is that an element? I can't help but think that at least that's a possibility. That's why this sudden surprise, hey, come on down now, seems to leap off the page to me, because maybe Aaron and Miriam realized, ooh, maybe there's a reason why Moshe is not doing as much of the marriage duties as we might think. So the three came out. Yahuwah comes down in a pillar of cloud. He stood at the door of the tent, and he called Aaron and Miriam. They both came forward. And he said, hear now my words. I'm teaching you something. Listen up. And part of the reason why I think Moshe is teachable, too, is this expression. I hear now my words. He's showing them. He's just made the point that Moshe is teachable. Well, now Miriam and Aaron are going to be teachable. Hear now my words. If there's a prophet among you, I, Yahuwah, I do make myself known to him. But I generally do so in a vision. Or I speak with him in a dream. Not the way I do it with Moshe. Hey, he's unique. He is trusted in all of my house. Do you get it? Moshe is a whole different breed. Moshe is set apart. Moshe is like unto no one except himself. Him, and with him alone, do I speak mouth to mouth, manifestly, not in dark speeches, not in the similitude of the way Yahuwah is often beheld, not like we're going to see other prophets do, in other words. So why were you not afraid to speak out against my servant, against Moshe? Are you chastened yet? And the anger of Yahuwah was kindled against them, and he departed. Now, it turns out, again, back to this issue, what's the reference to this Cushite woman? And why is that in here? Well, if there was an indication of something to do with the marital issues, and that's why they were on him, or I think really the truth is there's multiple things going on here, and we kind of have to just figure it was a bigger picture. But regardless, they didn't go into the tent at this point, right? They got the message, and maybe it's because they were unclean, or at least not quite ready to go in because of having had recent sexual activity. We don't know. But he was angry, and then he left. Then the cloud was removed from over the tent, and check it out. Look at Miriam. She's white as snow. She's leprous. No, she is a metzora. She has zara'at, but it literally says she was a metzora'at. White as snow. Aaron looked upon Miriam, and yep, look at that. She is white. She is, in fact, a Metzorah. And Aaron now says to Moshe, "Oh, my Lord, do not lay on me, I pray you, this sin upon us. We have done foolishly, for we have sinned." So he gets it. "Let her not, I pray, be as one who is dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed when he comes out of his mother's womb." So both brothers are concerned for their sister at this point. Moshe now cries out to Yahuwah, and he says, "Heal her now, O El, I pray you, I beseech you." So here is the response he gets. Yahuwah says to Moshe, "Look, if her father had just spit in her face, well, shouldn't she hide her face in shame for a week, for 7 days? So let her be shut up outside the camp for 7 days. After that, you can bring her back in again." So they did. They shut Miriam up outside the camp for 7 days. And the cloud stayed, the people stayed, until Miriam was brought in again. And afterward, the people then journeyed from Hatzarot, and they pitched in the wilderness of Paran. And that, of course, is where this portion ends. Miriam is outside the camp. Then she is healed. And then they bring her back in, and they journey to Bamidbar Paran.